Hello, this is Augustus and Tony Corbett, and you're listening to the Marriage Minutes Podcast,
where we use biblical principles to enhance marriages and eliminate divorces. For the next 30 minutes, get ready for lots of laughing, learning, and loving.
Welcome back to the Marriage Minutes Podcast with Augustus and Tony Corbett. How are you, sweetheart?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I am doing extremely well. I want to get back in this conversation we had in our last episode where we were talking about children caught in the middle of parents who are in the middle of divorce or in the middle of a custody fight, or even before that, there's, you know, tension in the house and fighting and arguing and all of that. And oftentimes children are caught in the middle of all of that, and then it spills over into court and, you know, it goes down here from there oftentimes. So we both are uniquely qualified to talk about this because as an attorney, I've represented many people in divorce and custody cases. And you bring over 25 years of experience as a child protective services consultant. In your last position, you were a consultant to the folks who were out doing the investigations and, you know, removing the children and all of that. You had done that for 20 years or so. And then you moved into a consultant position where you would sort of guide those people with very young children. So we both bring a wealth of experience to this topic, and we both have a heart for this because it's just heartbreaking seeing children caught in the middle of these situations. And this is something I don't know if I've ever mentioned on the podcast, but I'll mention it now. I was a victim of childhood abuse, okay? And so I have a particular sensitivity to this. I cannot stand to see children being abused because of my own personal experiences. So let's get back into this conversation and let's talk about it. And I think a great place for us to start is you said something in our last podcast, our last episode, about how trauma can disproportionately impact children 3 years and younger. And after the podcast, I told you that floored me. And I said, you know, where did you get that from? And turns out we both had read it in a book by a Dr. Bruce Perry that was co-authored by Oprah Winfrey. And so we thought that we would find that section of the book so that we could read it, so that we can substantiate what we said, what you said, and what blew me out, because I've forgotten it. And then as we were looking for it, I remembered him saying all that and how the brain develops, et cetera, et cetera. So first of all, how are you doing? I said a lot right there. So how are you doing? And take us where you want to go.
Okay. Thank you. I'm doing well. And thanks for sharing your own personal, you know, events from your childhood that takes courage, you know, for. And more people are being courageous, which I think is a good thing. The more we can talk about our childhood experiences, the more healing can take place. So I appreciate that. And the way where we left off last week, where last podcast was me talking about how a lot of times the public thinks that if a child is young, the child is not being affected. Being in a chaotic environment, thinking that the child has no understanding.
Right.
And cognitively, they may not, but emotionally, they do. And this is substantiated from this book, What Happened to You, by Dr. Perry and co-authored by Oprah. And this is on page 29 of the book. Oprah says,
Well, it's 29 of the ebook. Page 29 okay. of the ebook. We don't know what page it is of the hard copy.
Right. Thank you for bringing that out. This is the ebook. Oprah says, one of the most important things I've learned from your research, referring to Dr. Perry, is that young children absorb so much more than we realize. The younger you are, the more sensitive you are to your emotional climate. People feel like they can curse in front of young children. They believe they can be violent in front of young children. I've done hundreds of shows where mothers said, "Well, when he gets older, I'll leave the abusive father," thinking, "My child's too young to understand," when in fact, it's exactly the opposite. Now, that was Oprah's.
And that's true. I mean, right. You know, a lot of adults think just that way as Oprah just expressed
right.
it.
Dr. Perry responds and says, and I'm quoting, "Yes, it's exactly the opposite. The younger you are, the more you depend upon your caregivers, parents, and other adults to help you interpret the world. In some ways, the young child experiences the world through the filters of these adults. While a very young child may not understand the words used in language, they do sense the nonverbal parts of communication, like tone of voice. They can feel the tension and hostility in angry speech and the exhaustion and despair of depressed language. And because the brain is growing so rapidly in the first years of life and creating thousands upon thousands of associations about how the world works, these early experiences have more impact on the infant and young child."
All right, and then in another place, Oprah asked the question, she says, "For years," I'm quoting Oprah, "you've been telling me that the earliest experiences have the biggest impact because that is when the brain is most rapidly growing." And he says a lot, but he ends up saying, "And because so much of the world," I'm quoting Dr. Perry now, "and because so much of the world is new when you're a baby, that's when your brain is most rapidly and actively making these new connections. The experiences in the first years of life are disproportionately powerful in shaping how your brain organizes.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, it's just mind blowing. And I want parents to hear this.
Right.
You know, I want parents of young children who are having difficulties in their relationships to realize that just because your child is 2 months old or 3 months old or a month old or a year old, they may not understand, Dr. Perry says, what you're saying, but they feel what you're saying. And that's shaping the organization of their brains and the development of their brains.
Exactly.
And can cause PTSD, he goes on to talk about.
Yes. So I recommend this book, What Happened to You? A Conversation About Trauma. I really recommend that, but you're exactly right. And that's why we wanted to bring this out, because so many people don't realize that. And just like what Oprah said, they'll say, well, you know, they'll say maybe the dad will get better, or I wait till the child gets a little older, not realizing that, no, it's already having an impact on that child. And we want to make sure that we protect children and that we raise children in as a safe environment as possible.
Well, you know, sometimes, and we kind of touched on this too in our last episode, sometimes parents, you know, think, well, just because I'm having issues with the father or mother doesn't make me a neglectful or an abusive parent. What do you mean? I mean, how dare you say that I'm neglectful or abusive of my child? I would never neglect or abuse my child. What we're saying is, if you and the child's other parent have this acrimonious, adversarial, angry, chaotic relationship, that child is being impacted, that would constitute neglect, and damage is likely being done to your child. And of course, that's not what you're intending. That's not what you want for your child. Who wants that for their child? But that's what's happening because, again, you know, children in that kind of environment, the younger they are more impacted by, you know, what's happening with the parents.
Exactly.
They're caught in the middle.
They're caught in the middle. That's exactly right. And I believe that, you know, we did a podcast on marital conflict. You know, we have said every marriage.
Go back and listen to that. Yes. We did, what was it, two parts to it? Two or three parts?
I think two or three.
Yeah.
At least two parts.
Right.
On marital conflict. Go back and listen to that. Because every marriage will have conflict.
Sure.
But we need to know how to de-escalate it, how to decrease it so that it does not have a negative impact on our children. So we were talking about this can happen in the pre-divorce, you know, these neglectful situations that the parents are engaged in could lead to divorce. And then that's when they would call you and say, hey, I want to file for a divorce. I can't take it any longer. You know, whatever the case may be, I want to divorce. And there you, the lawyer, steps in.
Yes. And sometimes it's not divorce. Sometimes it's custody. You know, the parents may not be married. But nonetheless, you know, it's going to court now. It's headed for court.
Right.
And so, yes, that's when they call us. And shortly within the first few minutes of that consultation, we want to know about the children. Because typically in a divorce situation, property and children are going to be the big issues. And children, most of the time, with most parents, are going to be the biggest.
Right.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Especially, I would say, well, I don't want to say that. I was going to say especially with moms, you know, because of their mothering instinct. But fathers are just as devoted to their children, so I'll retract that. But the kids are going to be at the top of the list when there is a divorce, and so that's, you know, we got to talk about that whenever they call, and if they retain us to represent them, we have this really thick intake form that they got to complete. I mean, it's like 70 pages. Because we want to get into the depth, get into the details of what's been going on with the child and or the children.
Mm-hmm.
We need to know everything.
Right.
You know, the good, bad, and the ugly. We need to know it. Because that's also going to be a major focus of the judge, the children. The property, okay, we can work this out. All right, we can get the property. You know, that's sticky, too, you know, when there's a lot of property going on. And sometimes that even spills over into the custody matters, right? But, you know, everyone is kind of focused on how are we going to handle the children? Who's going to get possession of the children, physical possession? We call that conservatorship here in Texas. Who's going to be the one who's getting visitation and custody, access to the child? And the court is going to be guided by what's in the best interest of the child. That's where the court's going to be coming from. But quite often, and unfortunately, a lot of times parents are not focused on that, what's in the best interest of the
child. And that's the sad part.
That's the sad part. Sometimes it has become personal between them. And they are too busy fighting each other so many times. And the child is just literally in the middle of all of that. I see it all the time. I'm being a little bit, you know, circumspect on how I talk about this because we currently have cases like this. And, you know, I don't want to say too much because I don't want to talk about anybody's situation. Nor do I want to suggest that the parents are always coming at this from a bad place. You know, when we represent someone who's fighting for the custody of their child, I would say in all our cases, they have a legitimate reason for being, for fighting for that child. And they're spending lots of money trying to get that child.
Right.
So they have a good reason for it. And if we thought it was a bad reason, we wouldn't represent them. Okay? Mm-hmm. We wouldn't be standing up in court representing someone, a parent, who's abusive to a child, trying to help them get custody. We wouldn't do that.
Right.
Like I said earlier, I was a victim of child abuse growing up. So I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that. I just wouldn't do it.
Right.
So a lot of times they have the best intentions. But still, sometimes the fight itself, the animosity between the parents. Parents, please listen to me out there. The animosity between the parents just overtake everything. Right?
Right.
To the point where the child or the children are not the focus. Can you put aside the fact that this parent cheated on you? Or that this parent is, physically abusive to you? I'm not suggesting there that you should stay. No, the divorce, you need to get away from this person, because we explained in the first episode that if you stay in an abusive situation, although the child's not being abused physically, the child is suffering.
Right.
We just explained that.
Right.
And CPS could say that you are neglectful for keeping your child in that situation.
Right.
Okay. So we're not ever saying stay in an abusive situation, but we do want you to think, okay, we couldn't get along, and he or she mistreated me, but are they still a good parent? Are they still a good father? If so, then let's try to work something out that this person can still be involved in their child's life.
Right, and in child welfare, what we call that is just co-parent successfully.
Right.
Just have a good co-parenting relationship. That's the goal. If divorce is inevitable and one has filed for divorce, then just stay within the bounds of whatever the agreement is that the lawyers have come up with or the judge has signed off on. Stay within those bounds and don't get into the nitpicking, calling CPS for something that's really not abusive or neglectful. Or,
well, now, a lot of parents use CPS, right? They weaponize CPS,
They weaponize CPS. Yes. We get that a lot. In fact, I remember one case I was reviewing, and the judge told one parent, do not make another CPS report.
Yes.
Because all the other ones have been invalidated. They were not substantiated. It was just out of animosity, revengeful. It came from a bad place.
Yes, they were trying to use it in court.
Right.
If there's a custody battle going on, because we as attorneys absolutely will put in front of the judge the fact that this person, that CPS, got involved, was involved, right, called, yep, and had reason to believe that there, right, was some neglect or abuse. We absolutely are going to use that, right, information in the custody battle. So some of them will try to weaponize.
And with the children being caught in the middle, if they're school age kids, you don't realize those CPS workers are going to school, embarrassing the child, asking the same questions over and over again. I mean, it can become traumatic for the child to have CPS involved in their life needlessly.
Needlessly. That's the operative word,
that's
right?
That's the operative word.
Because both of us want CPS involved if the child needs protection.
Right.
Definitely. From an abusive or neglectful parent, but needlessly, absolutely. In fact, I want to go back to what I just said. So, and I want to get your perspective on that. So let's say there is a couple and they have been fighting. Let's be more specific. Let's say that the husband or boyfriend has been abusive to the mother. Okay, physically, emotionally, however you want to put it, he's been abusive. But he's a good father. Now, I know, how can you be a good father abusing your child's mother? I get that. I really do. And that's why I'm asking your opinion on this, because it's kind of hard to parse this out. I agree with someone who would say, how can he be a good father if he's abusing or beating the child's mother? That I agree with. You can't. But should that father still, though, have some relationship with his child?
Well, as you know, the courts have decided yes. If the offended parent in the relationship between the two adults is able to not mistreat and show maltreatment towards the child, definitely that parent should have access to the child.
Well, sure. That's what the law says. I know what the law says. I'm asking you, if you were dealing with that type of situation, and when you were CPS, and the father's abusive, would CPS be in favor of this father still having, and I know you all don't get in a whole lot of custody issues, but would you all be in favor of this child still having a relationship with this child?
Yes, if the father's not abusive towards the child or subjecting the child to an abusive relationship, definitely. Because what research shows...
No, but I'm saying the father is...
But the father was abusing the mom. If the mom and the father separated and that trigger is not there any longer, he's not... Say he lives alone now. He got an apartment living alone and he has visitation with his child. First, third, and, you know, fifth weekend of the month. Yes, CPS would not say that he could not visit his child.
All right, so
CPS would be saying that if you have a girlfriend living in the home with you, you all cannot be involved in an abusive relationship in front of that child.
Okay. All right, so.
And let me just say this, and this is what probably the public doesn't realize. Most of the time, it is good for children to be able to connect to their parents. If they can connect safely, that's the operative word again, is safety. So just because the husband has been a bad husband does not necessarily
But not just a bad husband. You know, bad can mean that he's not paying the bills.
Yeah. Okay, abusive husband.
Yes.
Just because he's been an abusive husband does not necessarily mean that he would be an abusive father. He could be. And if he is, then CPS will be restricting his access to his child. It will have to be supervised or perhaps no access until he takes some courses and classes or something.
Well, let's go back to what Dr. Perry said. Dr. Perry said a child's environment, especially the younger the child is, disproportionately impacts that child. So if the father's abuse is directed to the mother, but it's in the presence of the child, isn't that indirectly abuse toward the child as well?
But that's why I said if the father and the mother have separated and living in different households,
okay,
that would be the point. If the mother and the father are no longer under the same roof and the father lives by himself, for instance, or lives with his mother, and he's able to take care of his child when the child visits, then CPS would not have a problem with that.
Okay. All right. Okay. So I can hear some folks having an issue with that. And I understand why. You know, so the father, they're not living together. This family is not living together. Then let's say that they're not even together anymore, let's say.
Right.
Okay. Boyfriend and the girlfriend. But when he does see her, he's abusive.
Okay, now that's another, you just added something. Now, when he does see her and they still have drama, then if child welfare is involved, one of the things that they could do is say, no, you cannot see each other unless there is a third party there.
Supervised visitation.
Supervised visitation. Know what I'm saying? Not just supervised visitation with the child, but if the child and the mother, say the father and the mother decides we're going to, I'm going to pick up the child at 2 o'clock every Saturday. Then we would say somebody would need to be there with the mother or the father.
Oh, sure.
To be another witness.
That happens all the time. Sometimes what we'll do in that kind of situation is have them exchange the child at the police department.
Exactly. That's why I was going to say all of that, again, trying to just protect the child.
Right.
Because we know something could jump off any moment because they have such a volatile relationship that, yes, we would not want the father and the mother to be together and have the child without some kind of buffer or protection. But that's why I say if they're separated, but you added something else to that dynamic.
Separated, but he's still yet abusive when he sees her.
Right. Then no, we still have to protect the child.
All right. And I remember in law school reading many, many cases about a parent's constitutional fundamental right to be involved in their child's life. The hurdle is really high to separate, parents from their children.
Exactly. And to parental termination and all of that. Yeah, that's a high hurdle.
That's a very high hurdle. And we also touched on the last time how Texas has raised that hurdle even higher through the legislature here and is trying to strengthen parental rights.
Right.
Against CPS, right?
Right.
Texas, the folks who run the country, the people in the legislature are fiercely independent people and don't like a lot of government intrusion.
Right.
And feel like CPS has been very intrusive. So they're trying to dial some of that power back.
Yeah, that's the impression I got right before I retired. Yes, that, and the pendulum swings, it goes back and forth. Sometimes, if you have a very negative, bad income of a lot of child deaths, then it'll go back to, okay, we got to be more restrictive against the parents.
Yeah.
But then you get these lobbyists for parents who say, hey, no, CPS is too intrusive. They do this, they do that. We have rights. And then the legislature will go and be more pro-parent.
That's true.
So it just swings back and forth.
Exactly. All right, now, so we come back to the divorce situation or during the divorce. And there are some things that we can do during the pendency of the divorce to protect the child as well, apart from CPS. For example, sometimes judges will appoint a guardian ad litem for the child when it seems like the parents and their representatives, the attorneys, are just so going after each other, so acrimonious and so bitter fighting and so forth. Then the judge may say, hey, look, none of you folks, you lawyers or the parties that you represent, are focused on the children. So I'm going to appoint someone who is not being paid to represent your client's interests, who can kind of just report to me. And that's the guardian ad litem.
Okay, I'm glad you mentioned that. Yes.
Okay.
Okay, so the audience can know that terminology if they're involved in a divorce proceeding.
Yes.
The purpose of the guardian ad litem.
Yes, or the what's also called an attorney ad litem.
Okay.
Okay. The judge can go both ways. Sometimes the judge will appoint the same person in both roles, which may not be ethically the right thing to do. But the point is the judge wants sort of a neutral party out there in the field working on this matter and someone that can come back and report to him or her what's going on.
And our daughter Chloe, she has been a guardian ad litem.
Yes, she sure has. Very proud of her. She does a tremendous job.
Advocating for children.
Advocating for kids, absolutely. And so Also, there are times when the court will ask, or the parents, one of the parents will ask for a parent facilitator. Okay? These are the kinds of resources a court has to decrease the acrimony between the parents and facilitate a more positive relationship for the benefit and welfare of the child. So a parenting facilitator who is there to kind of help the two parents, you know, communicate in a more productive, amicable way, again, for the benefit of the child.
Yes. And a lot of those parenting facilitators could be social workers as well.
Yes. Also, sometimes the judge will say, well, I want you all to communicate through a website. You all can't seem to talk to each other civilly. So I want you to do all your communication through a website and exchange messages through the website and talk that way until you all can learn how to have a civil conversation.
Right.
So that's another way that that the court system tries to be there on behalf of the child. Again, that's caught in the middle.
Right.
You see? Mm-hmm. So there are some tools in the court system to try and help, but none of them really get to the hearts of the parents. That to me is what you gotta. You gotta get to the hearts of the parents and try to get them to understand that this should be about the child or right. the children.
Right. I totally agree. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, then how do you get to the hearts of the parents?
It's difficult.
Know? Right.
It's hard.
Difficult. That's yeah. when, you know, the pastors or the ministers or some yes. other relatives would try to convince and show and reveal to the parent, hey, this is not helping your child.
Yeah. And a lot of times they'll, you know, tell the lawyer, look, you're not my pastor.
Right.
You're not my priest or whatever. I'm paying you to be my advocate.
Right.
And what I want you to advocate for is that I get this and he or she gets nothing.
Right.
But we're still, though, it doesn't matter. We still have a responsibility to say to that parent, hold on a minute. This is still about what's in the best interest of the child. That's the law.
Right.
That's not me trying
so
to be your.
That does not go away.
That doesn't go away. That's the standard.
Throughout the entire divorce proceeding, you're saying that is
the standard.
The standard.
For the children.
For the children.
That's what everybody is bound by. And there are a number of factors that we look at to determine what's in the best interest of the child. Okay, a number of factors. And so we you know, may tell them, we're not trying to be your pastor. This is the law.
Right.
The judge is bound by what's in the best interest of the child, and it's very subjective oftentimes. Here are the factors, but it's kind of left up to the judge to see how you fall on these factors,
right.
one way or another. And the factors are sort of designed to make the parties put the child first.
Right. Now, let me also ask you, there's another tool that I know the court system uses. We used it also, you know, in our, when we would have to remove children from abusive homes, the home studies.
Yes.
Child, you know, home evaluations and all of that.
Absolutely. We, typically, we'll ask the judge, file a motion and ask the judge for a home study of the other party.
Right.
Because, and it, thank you for bringing it up, because, you know, one parent may feel like the other parent's home is not suitable for this child for whatever reason. And quite often when the judge orders a home study, he or she will order it for both parents.
Right.
You know, one parent may be asking for it, but both of them end up getting a home study.
So keep that in mind, you parents, you know, that a home study could be.
Will likely be ordered for both parents.
Right.
If not just one.
If there is some dispute in the custody.
Yes. And so then someone with your background and training will come into the home and will look at all aspects of the home, you know, get very much into your business.
I mean, very much. That's the whole point, you all. These things can become so invasive, so intrusive, so, it's a thorough
yes.
look at all parts of your home, your finances, your employment, you know, how much you pay in your mortgage, your rent, who lives in a home with you.
I mean, they will physically come to the house.
They will physically come to the house and look from room to room.
Could you say that again? My apologies. I couldn't hear what you said.
Siri, we're not talking to you. Sorry, you all.
So very invasive. So that's why with Marriage Menace, we first want to enhance marriages.
Yes.
And as much as possible, try to eliminate divorces. But when divorces are inevitable or they're just going to happen and will happen, or you all have already initiated divorce, just know what to expect.
Yeah. But, you know, back to the home study, there are times when they're very needed. They're very needed because the home of the other person, you know, if we're representing somebody and we know or have good reason to believe that that person's home life is messed up, all kind of stuff going on at their house, you know, they just run their house this way. The court needs to know that.
Right.
Okay, the judge needs to know that so that the judge can make what decision is in the best interest of the child. Okay? So it's I'm glad, really glad you mentioned home study because it can be sometimes the deciding factor, because the home, you know, we rear our children in will have a tremendous impact on them. So that's another tool. Yes, home studies. So we have the job as attorneys to try and help, you know, guide our clients through this process, this divorce process where children are involved. Now, there is also another type of divorce. There's another type of divorce called collaborative law. Okay. It seems like a good idea. I'm sure it is. I've not done, I don't think any collaborative law divorces. But the basic ideal is the parents and their attorneys get in a room and hash it out. Okay. They get in there and hash it out.
Mm-hmm.
It streamlines the process. Right.
Right.
With divorce, we have to do oftentimes a whole lot of other stuff, which is not, you know, the collaborative law process is not a good thing.
It's more adversarial.
Yes. I mean, and not just adversarial. We got the job of protecting our client's interests and the child. So we have to do discovery, for example. We have to do temporary hearings. We have to do, the home studies. Don't have to, but oftentimes we do. So there are things that we have to do to get a picture of what's going on so that we can help, you know, both our client and the child. You see, the collaborative law can streamline all that and kind of get rid of all that. The parents already kind of know where they want, what they want. And so it costs a lot less money.
Mm-hmm.
And so they just get with their lawyers at a conference table and just try to bang it out.
Well, let me ask you this. I like that approach because I think the less you can have outside people involved, the better. So even if it's not just a collaborative.
But that doesn't mean that outside people are not going to be involved, because if the court is still overseeing this thing, and if there are issues with the children or something, you all still may be involved, or you know, home studies, parent facilitators. So other people still may be involved. It's just that they may say, we would rather try and work this out using this collaborative law situation.
Well, let me ask you this. I'm leading up to, if you have two parents and they both say, yes, it's in our best interest to now end this divorce,
end the marriage?
End this marriage. Couldn't they come up with an agreement themselves? And that would just streamline streamline it even more. You know, this is what, you know, we're not fussing and fighting now. We've decided to go our separate ways, but because of our children and because we want to, we are believers and we want to act civilly, then this is what we have agreed upon. And then just bring that to you, the lawyer, and it can make it so much go faster and smoother.
Well, the dirty little secret about being a divorce lawyer, family law lawyer, is that is the best way to do it.
Right.
Okay. The divorce lawyer, the family law lawyer makes less money that way because obviously we bill by the hour, and the more time it takes, the more money we make, right? But we tell our clients, that we're Christians first and foremost. You know, we got to make a living. We're in business, right? But money is not king and lord and God of us.
Right.
Right.
And so I can second that. I've heard you, you know, tell parents, but can you all just agree upon this or get together and hash this out?
Exactly. Exactly. And by the way, you now work for the firm. Thank God. Amen. Right. You're not, you retire from the state and you're now the chief operating officer. You run the show actually, while we just try to stay focused on our law practice. Chloe and I stay focused on the law. So, but that's really the best thing. If they can work out something amongst themselves, it's better for them. It's better for the child because they are civilly trying to put their heads and hearts together to do what they believe is in the best interest of the child and of the divorce and so on. So it's really the best thing to do. You don't really want a judge having to make those decisions. Now, the judge will make those decisions because they got to be made.
Right.
Okay? The judge has to make those decisions. But it's best if the parties can do it. Sometimes a mediator can help the parties hash out their differences. Sometimes
so that's another tool.
Mm-hmm. Mediation. Sometimes the parents just can't get there by themselves and they need a neutral person, a mediator, to just kind of facilitate the conversation. Can't force them to do anything, but the mediator is oftentimes running back from one room to the other room, just saying, hey, he said he'll do this if you'll do that.
Right, you know, kind of thing.
So that's another thing to try and yet help them reach an amicable resolution. And again, it's best because they're behaving civilly toward each other.
Right.
That's always going to be better for the child.
And that's modeling for the children.
Exactly.
What we're saying, you all, if you have children, it should always go back to the children.
Exactly.
Because those children will become adults. And as adults, there'll be husbands or wives or there'll be employees. And you do not want to stunt their growth or you don't want to impede their growth. You don't want them to have rocky relationships or, you know, negative social interactions because of what they have seen amongst their parents.
That's right.
And from the environment they came from.
That's right. That's right. So, divorce is, you know, inevitable at times, unfortunately. Our podcast is designed to enhance marriages and to eliminate divorces.
Right.
Okay? That's our focus. Because we read some statistics in the first episode on this topic about how divorce affects children. It's not good. Now, we're not saying stay in an abusive marriage just because they're children. We're not saying that.
And I will say, and we're not saying every child, you know, will have all of these just awful negative effects. Some children can bounce back faster than others and better than others. But we're saying there is the risk there of children being negatively impacted. Research studies support that.
Yes, and the risk can be, you know, pretty high. Again, which is why we, you know, developed this podcast to give, to offer our going on 34 years of marriage. This coming May 14th, 1988 was when we got married. So it's been 34 years, coming up on 34 years. And the highs, the lows, the ups, the downs. And it's been great. It's been an awesome, awesome ride, spending the last 34 years of my life with you.
Yes, more than half of my life has been spent with you.
Yeah, I hope it's been good.
It's been good. It's been good. Good, good.
Yes. For me, it's been awesome.
It's been awesome. It's been fantastic.
Oh, Lord. Just having a little fun here. But kind of lighten up this moment a little bit, because this is kind of, you know, a heavy issue. You know,
but this is where people are. People live here.
Right.
And they need to have some good information and Bible-based, you know, and research-based information.
Yes. All right. So let me take 5 minutes to just talk about, once we, you know, have hashed out all the issues in the divorce, now it's time to put all that in a divorce decree. And that divorce decree has to deal with child custody issues, child support issues, which we didn't talk about child support, but that also is a major source of tension oftentimes in these divorces and custody cases. Major, major source. Major, 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 major source. So we really could spend a whole nother episode just talking about child support.
Yes.
And how that impacts, you know, children and the relationship between their parents. So anyway, assuming that we got all that worked out, the property, the child support, the child custody, all of that, who we've determined where the child's going to live primarily and how many times and how often the other parent is going to get chance to see the child. Assuming that we got all that worked out, we got to put all that in a written document and got to present it to the court. And the judge will have the final say-so on whether or not this document still is in the best interest of the child. The judge is still bound by that. So just because the parents reach an agreement, back to your question, does not mean that the judge will agree with that agreement.
Right.
The judge may say, nope, this is not in the best interest of this child. Not doing it. You all go back to the drawing board. Get something better to me. I'm not agreeing to this. Okay. Most of the time they will agree, you know, if it's been worked out and so forth. So then we get that document before the court. We have what's called a prove-up hearing in front of the judge. The judge signs off on it. And now that document controls this family post-divorce. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That document determines everything now. How often, you know, child and parents get together, the possessory conservator, the one who has custody and access to the child, possession. So all these issues are spelled out in this oftentimes 40, 50 page document, okay? And it's a document, again, that's hopefully put together in a way that's in the best interest of the child and or children, right? The thing we want you all to take away from this more than anything else, in my mind, are two things. One, the Bible says God hates divorce. And that's because of the impact that it can have on the divorcees as well as the children. And the impact that it has on society.
Wow, I'm glad you mentioned that. Yes.
Right? So he hates it for those reasons. It's bad. It's bad. The late Dr. Miles Monroe said a divorce is like experiencing death. Two people have rooted their lives together, and all of a sudden they're now in court ripping that union apart. That itself can be traumatic to the parents. And as you pointed out earlier, It is often very traumatic for the children. Very. So we have devoted this podcast to enhancing marriages so that divorce doesn't even come up. In our 34 years of marriage, by the grace of God, I don't believe we've uttered the word divorce.
Right, the D word is not a part of our vernacular.
Exactly. May have thought it.
May have thought it. You may have thought it. I may have thought it.
but it wasn't said.
It wasn't said.
Because life and death is in the power of the tongue,
that's
right?
That's right. That's right.
So divorce is in the power of the tongue. Right. So we don't go there. We go there. We don't go there. So my first takeaway is divorce is bad. Try to avoid it. Now, there are times where you got to.
That's what I was going to say. Now, let's quickly, because we are not those ministers and believers who say never, ever.
Not at all.
Divorce. I mean, even right. God.
Even gave, the scripture tells us when.
Gave allowances for divorce. Exactly. So we are not saying that. Mm-mm. But we are saying if it can be worked out.
Work it out.
Work it out.
It's going to be best for everybody.
Right.
If it's a healthy, if it can be, if, even if it's not now, and can become a healthy, nurturing union, marriage, then try to work it out.
Right.
That's the first thing. Second thing is, it is sad seeing children caught in the middle of sparring parents who have turned their ire and animus toward each other. Yes. And are completely now, you know, not even paying attention to their behavior and how it impacts the child.
Right.
Now, once again, there are times when a parent needs to and have to fight for that child because the other parent can be unfit.
Right.
Just an unfit parent. And it would be a danger for this child to be with that parent. But a lot of times that's not the situation. It's just that they've become bitter toward each other.
Right. No, I totally agree. I appreciate those takeaways. I absolutely concur with those takeaways, and I pray that our listening audience also can appreciate the takeaways and try, if you're still in a marriage, try to enhance it. If you're in a divorce, try to do it as civilly as possible and always keep the best interest of your child in the front of your mind and your actions.
Because that's what the court is going to do.
Because that's what the court is going to do.
In its opinion.
Right.
Okay. Right. All right. So we would recommend that you go back and listen to our previous podcast on this topic, Children in the Middle. And we would also recommend that you go back and listen to our podcast dealing with marital conflict.
Yes.
Okay. Perhaps that can interrupt the cycle of divorce in your marriage. We hope so. That's why we did it.
And we also did a podcast on how to stay married during a pandemic, something to that effect. So we recommend those previous podcasts for you all.
Absolutely. So once again, this was an invigorating conversation. I enjoyed it tremendously. I got a few things off my heart.
Very good. So did I. So did I. Yeah. I think this was very informative.
All right. So that is going to be the... that's going to conclude our podcast today on this topic. I am Augustus Corbett. And
I am Tony Corbett.
And this is the Marriage Minutes Podcast. Until the next time, be blessed.